90125. We were cinema at that time, and John came in and it changed the whole validity of it, really, in so many ways. Because, you know, John has the unique voice of the band, and really, it, you know, that's what it is. That's really when it becomes Yes, too.
The sound of Yes's harmonies is not John, it's John and Chris. And the others try, you know, get involved, but really no one else can sing. It's really John and Chris's voice that make the difference.
I think we were always into sort of uplifting music. You know, I personally didn't follow the Stones into their satanic realm. I followed the Beatles into All You Need Is Love.
I'm Tony Kaye of Yes with Redbeard.
I'm John Anderson of Yes with Redbeard.
I'm Alan White of Yes with Redbeard.
This is Trevor Raven of Yes. You're in the studio for 90125.
The winter of 1983-84 marked the reincarnation of one of rock's most enduring bands. The history of Yes spanned 5 decades. A complex saga with an ever-changing cast of extremely talented musicians, all orbited like electrons around the nucleus of Yes vocalist John Anderson and the late bass player vocalist Chris Squire. Since they first formed Yes way back in 1968, there was at least a dozen different Yes lineups and almost double that many individual members counting touring musicians. But by 1980, even Chris Squire, the one musician to have played on every Yes album, even Chris Squire had had enough. Punk rock had found Yes's precious pomposity then to be irresistible as a target, and their public execution was mercifully swift. The story of Yes had finally reached its end, or so it seemed. Drummer Alan White replaced Bill Bruford on the 1972 Close to the Edge tour. When Yes broke up in 1980, Alan and bass player vocalist Chris Squire kept in touch, working on new songs. And in 1982, they almost formed a new supergroup that they called XYZ that would have turned some heads. Here's Alan White in the studio.
We played with Jimmy Page for about 8 weeks. And we wrote about 8 songs, and Jimmy wrote some parts with us. But mostly the writing was being done by Chris and myself.
That's pretty scary stuff to think about. That's formidable. Alan White, Chris Squire, and Jimmy Page.
That's right. In fact, the music was great. I mean, they were just kind of demo types of things that we were doing. But I think in the end, management got into it and the whole thing dissipated and fell to pieces.
That's a shame.
Which is when Atlantic Records, they called someone from Atlantic Records, called up and said, we have this guy, Trevor Rabin, who we think you might be interested in playing with. And they flew him to England. And we just had one jam, really, in Chris's basement studio, and it was starting to sound real good. And that was the real birth of what was going to be called cinema.
We'll be right back.
In early 1983, guitarist, singer, songwriter Trevor Rabin was, in everyone's estimation, a star in the making. A native of South Africa, Trevor's father was a violinist in the Johannesburg Symphony. Trevor Rabin moved to London in 1978, worked with Jack Bruce and Ray Davis of the Kinks, eventually hooked up with Chris Squire, Alan White, and Tony Kaye for Cinema. An example of just how talented Trevor Rabin is appears on 90125 in the song Leave It.
Leave It was something really that Chris and I, we arrived at a studio in the middle of 90125 to do a drum track on a certain song, and we just couldn't get a decent drum sound. And we had 2 weeks booked, and we thought, well, what are we going to do? We can't cancel, we're going to get cancellation fees, we've got to stay here. So I sat at the piano, and Chris came and sat around with me, and we wrote Leave It. The reason the vocals turned out the way they did is because we did the vocals before anything else. So we spent a lot of time doing an a cappella thing, and there was a lot of thought whether we should just keep it a cappella or bring in the instruments, but we obviously, it turned out we brought them in. But on the B-side of the single, it is a cappella. There's a funny story with that.
What about it?
We'd finished all these vocals. It was just Chris and I that did all the vocals. There was something, I think there was 24 voices, which we'd done. That's how many voices are on there.
But from two people?
From two people.
By multi-tracking.
Multi-tracking. And the engineer wiped it.
What?
By mistake.
He accidentally
wiped. What he did was he wiped the click track.
The reference metronome,
so that we could put any kind of sequencing or machines on it. So we had to lay down a new one, and there wasn't. Today you can deal with that, but then we couldn't deal with it, and we took the vocals, put them in a Fairlight computer, and I just played the vocals off the computer in time with a new click track, which took ages. We then felt that at the end of it, it didn't feel human enough, so we redid all the vocals again on top of those. So what you have on the record is a combination of the machine with our voices on. And what this machine does is it takes the voices and you play them, but it is the voice. It's not a facsimile, it is the actual thing.
I can feel no sense of measure, no illusions as we take refuge in young man's pleasure, breaking down the dreams we
another town, one more show. Downtown, you're giving away, but you never came back. No phone to take your place, do you know what I mean? We had the same intrigue as the Carter Kings. Driving snow. Uptown, the diggity dog, better lay your claim. Get home, you're not alone. You just broke out of the danger zone. Be there to show your face on another dreamy day.
Dun 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 dun. One down, one to go, another town, one more show. Downtown, giving away, but you never came back. No phone to take your place, do you know what I mean? We had the same intrigue as the daughter came.
Next, Trevor Rabin, Tony Kaye, and Alan White will be joined in the studio by Yes lead singer John Anderson to recall how the band Cinema went from full screen to high definition. The question of whether the rock audience wanted this band back was answered with a resounding yes. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for the 90125.
I'm Alan White of Yes with Redbeard.
I'm John Anderson of Yes with Redbeard.
I'm Tony Kaye of Yes with Redbeard.
This is Trevor Raven of Yes. You're in the studio for 90125.
Thank you, gentlemen. They were almost ready to finish a complete album they had worked on for the better part of a year when Chris Squire played the Cinema recordings for his old friend, John Anderson, who was so impressed that John volunteered to sing these songs himself. Trevor Rabin admits that while flattered that Anderson was so excited by the Cinema songs, it did put Trevor Rabin in an awkward spot.
There was parts of it which I felt were a little peculiar, because I was just so unaccustomed to hearing John singing my songs, obviously. Then he sang Hearts, which is, I think, the last track on the second side, and I really liked it. And we spoke, and he joined the band, and only at that point, which was, you know, out of 9 months, was the last month of the album. And that was at which point we called the band Yes.
When I asked cinema keyboard player Tony Kaye about his initial reaction, John Anderson jumped in first.
Shock. Oh, it's him again.
It was a shock to the system. It was a shock to the system. Him again. It's so natural and so obvious, you know, that it's not a shock at all. You know, it happened with 90125. We were cinema at that time, and John came in, and it changed the whole validity of it, really, in so many ways. Because, you know, John has the unique voice of the band. And really, it, you know, that's what it is. And that's really when it becomes Yes, too.
Hold up.
another terrific Trevor Rabin song from the Cinema Sessions that, with the addition of John Anderson's signature vocal, changed into the undeniable sound of Yes. On the album 90125, here's drummer Alan White.
We were going to play new music, a new direction, but you still had the rhythm section from Yes, so you're going to have overtones of the band within that sound anyway. And the idea was to create this new band and kind of switch gear, as it were. And only after we'd laid down like three quarters of the tracks that you hear on 90125, the backing tracks, and Trevor was actually thinking about starting to get into put vocals on and harmonies were being worked out, that Chris met John in a pub, I believe, somewhere, and John said, "I've heard you doing some really good work. Maybe I could sing on a track." So John came down and tried singing on a track.
And the initial thing was just maybe one song, right?
Yeah. It sounded so much like Yes, you couldn't call it anything else. So you really had to think about reverting back the other way and saying, well, it sounds like a new Yes.
Yes co-founder and lead vocalist John Anderson.
What I've always said, that Yes is something that hovers above the collective unit and keeps us in tow, keeps us working hard, and keeps our spirits in the right direction in order to make good music with a defined idea and not to just jump and try to make a hit single. The single market is very, very difficult to understand, difficult to ascertain. You know, one minute you're major famous and the next minute you're nothing. I'd rather make 10 good albums than one hit single. You know, it's one of those things that when the Yes idea first came, we would talk only album music.
believe when love is gone, how we move on like everyone. Only such fools, only such jealous hearts.
In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. Coming up, Tony Kaye, Alan White, and Trevor Rabin rejoin John Anderson in the studio. 90125 by Yes.
I'm Alan White of Yes with Redbeard.
I'm John Anderson of Yes with Redbeard.
I'm Tony Kaye of Yes with Redbeard.
This is Trevor Rabin of Yes. You're in the studio for 90125.
Thanks again, guys. Yes didn't even exist when the album 90125 was being recorded, and it took an outsider, Trevor Rabin, to provide most of the songs and certainly what would be turn out to be the key international hit for Yes. Here's Trevor Rabin in the studio.
Own of a Lonely Heart was something we never dreamed of doing. You know, I never thought of playing it to the band. It was a song I felt very strongly about, but I didn't feel it would fit in with, not the Yes thing, but just with who the guys were I was playing with. And I think it was Alan or Tony who heard it when I was rushing through some songs to play them. And they said, "What is that?" And I said, "Oh, it's a song called Own of a Lonely Heart that I'd written." And they said, "Well, let's try it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been on the album."
Keyboard player Tony Kaye of Yes.
It was the same scenario for Own of a Lonely Heart, too.
Yes, when, that went through quite a transformation, didn't it?
Well, it was on a tape of a lot of songs, and I will always remember because we were actually, when Trevor and I first went to London, we were sharing a room at our manager's house because we couldn't find the hotel or something, and we were lying in bed listening to a lot of music, and I heard this thing. It was just like a few bars.
Same.
Of this thing,
same thing.
And he said, "Oh no, it's a funk song that I wrote for someone." I said, "Trevor, we got to try this." And of course, he went through a lot of transitions, but he was going to skip by it.
And it's Yes drummer Alan White who confirms that "Owner of a Lonely Heart" was almost not even considered for the album.
It was the last song we listened to. It was completely the last song we listened to. We were putting all this other music down. I think Trevor was playing his tapes at home, and we were sat around the studio going, "Well, do we need something that's a little bit more like a single?" And Trevor said, "Well," he said, "I've got this song, but I never played it to anybody. I wrote it for somebody else." And Trevor played it, and it was almost instant. We put it down kind of really easily straight away, and then we got into doing all the crazy noises that you hear on it and the samples and the James Brown licks and all that kind of stuff. And it was just great. It was just something that was obvious should be on there. And that proved to be the most successful single I think we've had for a long time.
Move yourself, you are.
keyboardist Tony Kaye joins John Anderson and me in the studio.
Just like he appeared at, during the 90125 album. Yeah. I mean, actually, I think in many ways we kind of stumble along.
It's true. Looking for an opening.
It's
like getting a table at a restaurant.
I don't think anyone really. I don't think anyone really thinks about it. It's not like, you know, the phone calls are made.
Yeah. It would never happen
like that. It has to happen by stumbling along and even if it's separately to go through a period of writing music. And then somehow at the end of that period, just like it did in 90125 and probably before in certain ways, different ways, it stumbles along to the necessary right conclusion.
Chris Squire and Trevor Rabin join me in the studio to discuss their comeback as Yes on the album 90125.
What's evolved in the band's attitude that would allow you to even consider putting out this song with that arrangement and having the name Yes on it?
Well, I think it's got quite a lot to do with him, Trevor, that is. I mean, you know, especially based on the back of when Trevor joined the band and we got on with Lonely Heart to number one. That, for the same reason at the time, also it gained a lot of interest because people thought, God, that's Yes. You know, doing this, and it was basically a kind of a dance rock song. Funnily enough, after that, like, more rock songs became dance orientated, it seemed. But so we kind of set a little pattern there. But I think that's because we do take chances, and that's probably why we're still around. You know,
good point. But you know, we always have thought of you as taking chances to the left field, to the outer reaches. It's interesting to have the confidence, the talent to revisit potentially the same neighborhood that you were in with Owner. Mm-hmm. And you kind of liked the neighborhood when you were number one, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the time people assume that there's this contrived or organized system that we have of doing a record, and really it's totally disorganized, untogether. Nobody knows from one minute to the next what's going on.
And you're damn proud of it.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, with Owner, I mean, it was a song that I didn't even intend to play to the band. And when I was kind of thumbing through songs kind of thing for us to get into or not. And when Owner came up and said, yeah, and that's, you know, all credit to Chris and, you know, and Alan and for taking the chance after their heritage of Yes to delve into that area. Because, you know, had it gone the wrong way, you know, they could have been whipped and lashed for doing that.
Absolutely.
By the diehard Yes fans, but it turned out to be the right thing, and I think tradition of, it's like, yeah, let's go for it, it works. But I think I agree with Chris that the music is the center of it all, and yes, it is the thing that holds it together, but it's also the thing that pulls it apart, you know?
No, I don't know, and I'm not being...
Well, because one of the things that I found, you know, from when I first, you know, from joining the band and joining up, even before John joined, with it being cinema... And the thing that I enjoyed most about working with Chris, besides his talent, was he's not really a compromising kind of guy. And very often we'd have heated moments and go home that night and say, oh God, you know, I'm glad we got the weekend off. I don't have to deal with that tomorrow. But, you know, not having him around, I kind of miss it, you know, because it's very important. I think that relationship is very important. You know, it's something that brings out what it is we do. And then you put John into the equation. I'm talking about the 90125 thing. And it kind of confuses it even further.
It certainly makes it more complex.
But far more frustrating. But at the end of the day, we all, you know, it's a very rewarding thing. And, you know, it would be much easier for Chris to go off and do an album on his own, or for me to, or for John to. But it wouldn't sound the same as when we're all working together. It doesn't. Something happens when we work together. And that's why I think that's why it takes us a long time to do things. Not because we want to, but because it takes as long as the music demands us to take, kind of thing.
Yes, co-founder John Anderson.
I think we were always into sort of uplifting music. You know, I personally didn't follow the Stones into their satanic realm. I followed the Beatles into All You Need Is Love. That was my dream. I loved it. And I tended to follow that train of thought, even though I saw the Stones last year and it was great. You know, they were just the best.
They were the best.
It's something, I think what Tony said earlier, we seem to, like a magnet towards, we're sort of driven to write this kind of music, and it's not even soul-searching. It's very spirited music in many ways, and very the love of life, the love and need for understanding, ecology, and you become part and parcel of the people. You're with the people. They want to hear their train of thought put into musical form. That's why they come and see a concert. And we need them to affirm that we're doing the right thing. And the word yes is that affirmation, and it's an umbrella in which we all survive.
To you.
And it's only fitting that the only person, the only musician who ever appeared on every Yes album, the late Chris Squire, should have the final word in the studio.
I think definitely the Yes theme has always been a hopeful one. I think, rather than light and dark, I think we've used dark expressionism in order to show the difference between, good and evil, or light and dark, which, whichever way it is. But usually, even if the songs refer to darkness, it's because there's a positive attitude at the end of it,
I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Alan White, Trevor Rabin, Tony Kay, John Anderson, and God rest the soul of Chris Squire. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.